The news about cable news with the firings of Tucker Carlson from Fox News and Don Lemon over at CNN certainly caught the attention of their respective viewers and fans. These two separate stories actually do share a common thread. The lessons that they offer for people who either own or manage a business at any level, any industry. Joining us to look at these two lessons is the CEO of Miller Ingenuity, who has worked with business executives, lectures written about maximizing business growth, dealing with challenges, other vital topics. Stephen L. Blue, how are you today, Stephen?
I'm good. How are you?
Great to have you. Talk about maybe an aspect of these stories a lot of people might not have caught on. StephenLBlue.com, Stephen's website, and you can learn more about his work and his services. Let us start with Don Lemon, who was, just as a quick thumbnail profile here, he was not a lead horse as far as employees go. We've come to learn he created through his actions and words certainly a toxic work environment. Instead of a removal immediately, he was shifted around, which from Catholic Church learned a long time ago that didn't work out. And I mean, when you have an employee whose bad behavior is starting to make the in-house newsletter, how many more red flags do you need?
Actually, you don't need any of them. Once you see that, you need to take action. And I remember way back when Fox News fired Bill O'Reilly. And they waited a long time to do that because he was such a superstar. And, you know, who knows what happens in media companies. They're like, weird. They're different from, you know, regular businesses. But the analogy I would use, Chris, is in a business, if you have, like, a superstar sales guy, and he walks around causing all kinds of havoc in the organization because, you know, he has to have things his way, and you've got to accelerate orders, and you got to lower prices and all that kind of stuff. It just he drags the whole organization around, and they're never good enough and worthy enough to hang on to that because they just poison the whole environment. And that's probably what happened with Don Lemon. They should have gotten rid of that cat from the very beginning. Now, I want to be clear for the listeners. I don't take sides with either Don or Tucker Carlson, whatever their politics are. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about in either case, when they start creating havoc and major damage in the organization, you give them one warning and then you get rid of them.
Yeah, especially since, as you know, counted to what you referenced, Don Lemon was not the superstar. He was obviously replaceable, but for whatever reason, and again, too, just to reinforce, we're not talking about right, left, center. We're just talking about the mechanics of a business operation, which is, like it or not, what any, even the one I'm sitting in right now, this is a business before it's a media outlet, quite frankly, and some people just seem to forget that. With someone like Don Lemon, though, because obviously it was behind the scenes for a while, and one person can't catch everything. How important is it to have trusted eyes and ears if you're an owner or a manager of a business that when someone comes to you secondhand and says, we got a problem out there that you might not be aware of?
Well, you know, that's a good point, Chris, because the first thing is people have to feel comfortable in walking into your office and telling you just that. And if you react negatively or badly or short shrift them or dismiss their concerns, well, that'll be the last time they'll come and talk to you. So if you really want to know what's going on in the organization, first of all, you got to get out there. Don't hide behind the bunker called your office. Get out among your troops and talk to people and make sure they feel comfortable in sharing things with you. And then they'll come and tell you, you know, kind of what's going on. The other thing is, Chris, if someone does tell you something like that, you got to promise them anonymity. Because once the word gets around that they came in and talked to the boss, they're toast. You got to make sure that doesn't happen.
And at the flip side, too, you also have, referring to the toxic employee, you always have the two-faced one, the angel around the boss. But when the boss is away, all of a sudden they turn into Satan.
That's a fact. I think to some degree a lot of employees are like that, but that's because of the environment that the boss built, the culture, if you will. And if you read anything about me, you know I'm big into culture. Culture is everything. And if you build a culture that encourages or rewards that, and some companies do. I used to work for a guy years ago, Chris, that he really liked to have his subordinates at each other's throats. And he encouraged that, and he would facilitate that. He'd create situations where you'd be, you know, against each other, which is just completely stupid. But some people, some CEOs believe that that's the best way to get the performance out of the organization, and I don't think that it is.
Although, as you wrote in an article not too long ago, four reasons to encourage teams to engage in conflict, conflict being a civil conflict, not the ones that we're reading about in some of the stories here, there's conflict where you have to confront it. You're managing a company where everyone, that, you know, the angel Satan analogy I just made, and you were there attending one of their meetings, and you basically said, we're not getting out of this room until everyone confronts what they're holding back on.
Yep, that's right, because conflict exists in every organization. In a couple of forms, it's either buried, it's either ignored, or it's actually encouraged. One of those three forms. And in everything I've ever done, I not only encourage conflict management, if you will, but I demand it. But you can't just throw people into the cesspool and say, you guys duke it out and let me know when you're done. You have to teach them the principles of conflict resolution. And every organization I've ever been in, I brought a professional industrial psychologist to actually teach my team how do you productively manage conflict. Because if it's not productively managed, it can be a destructive issue. But I'll give you a couple examples. The Challenger disaster, there was all kinds of buried conflict in that organization. I did a study on that. All kinds of buried conflict in that organization that never got attended to and should have. And if it had been, that disaster would have never occurred. The other example I'll give you is the Boeing 737 MAX disaster. They had the same problem. They had all kinds of conflict around, but it wasn't addressed. It was either buried or it was sidestepped or it was ignored.
Talking with Stephen Blue, CEO of Miller Ingenuity, business expert, specializes in maximizing growth, dealing with challenges and other toxic topics. StephenLBlue.com is website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Let's shift over to Fox News, because there we did have the lead horse who, because of that, refused to follow policies. Anytime you're using the terminology, the misogynistic attitudes he did in the real world, that would get you not just fired but also sued. But he basically, he was one of the people who thought he was bigger than the person he worked for. That never winds up ending well, does it?
No, it never does, because, you know, at the end of the day, of course, these media guys think they're above everything. But at the end of the day, you work for, unless you're self-employed, you work for a corporation, and whether you like it or not, at the end of the day, you will do what they want you to do, and you won't do what they don't want you to do. And if you get into one of those situations, you should get one warning, and then you're out. That's just the way that it is. And anybody who thinks otherwise, it's like, you know what? This is not a business. Is not a democracy, Chris. It's a dictatorship. Now, you want to foster teamwork and great cultures and all that, which I do, and everyone should. But at the end of the day, I am the dictator, and I get to make the final call. And anybody that believes otherwise is just fooling themselves.
You wrote an article, Three Warning Signs Your Success is Leading to Failure. Any good salesperson will tell you they hate to break the all-time sales record. Why? Because then they know they'll be under heavy pressure to break it again. If they don't break it again, even if they had a terrific year, the organization will likely be disappointed. So they may take shortcuts or all manner of sales tricks to get the number up. That brought to mind, back in my sales days, I was called in to interview with a larger radio company, and their sales policy was, the end of the month, low biller, you get voted off the island. If in a calendar year you billed $1 million or more, you stayed, but all your accounts were taken away, and you had to start all over again, which that part, the first part I kind of get. That second part, though, confused me until I read your article, because that would keep me from being totally arrogant. If I hit that $1 million mark and I had to roll back my odometer and do it again, well, I obviously proved I could do it, so I'll do it again, but that would certainly keep me humble.
Well, yeah, and you know, I hate organizations that would say if you had a super terrific absolute year, then they beat the devil out of you the next year if you don't. I mean, there are some. I know some sales guys, not in my company, but some sales guys I have known will actually hold back orders to make and shove them into the following year to make sure they don't have that problem of, you know, you have to do better than you did the year before. That's just it's just silly to tell a guy or any salesperson that just broke the all-time record that, you know, you're toast if you don't break it again. All you're doing in that case, Chris, is you're discouraging excellence and performance, and that's sort of like not what you want to do.
Are managers, bosses, owners afraid to take action, especially with a publicly visible company, retail store, media outlet, whatever the case may be, because they're concerned about what image the action might present?
Well, you always have to be concerned about the perception of what you do, because people watch the CEO all the time, and they're looking for clues and cues of what could happen to them, basically. And so if you mishandle or poorly handle a termination, as an example of a high-profile employee, people will know that, and they won't forget that. And don't forget, these days, Chris, you also have this reputational risk as a company. If you do something galactically stupid, like airlines are really good for this, galactically stupid, it'll be all over social media, and it takes. I read a thing the other day, Chris, that one negative, you have to have like six positives to counteract one negative in social media.
And certainly, too, if someone liked what you're doing, they're sort of just not really going to be that public about it because they got what they wanted. It's that complainer that has the greater motivation to go into the public eye with their situation versus the person that you pleased.
That's exactly right. I mean, good deeds rarely go unpunished, and bad deeds get punished quickly.
So for the lessons from these two stories with Carlson and with Lemon, sure, you might be watching as an observer, but as a business owner, business manager, you never know, because it could be and might even be happening to you in your circle of business as we speak. So you might want to just take a second look at your policy, your practices, and how you address the situation so you don't wind up in the seats like the heads of those two media organizations are sitting in right now. Learn more about Stephen's work, his expertise, his focus, StephenLBlue.com. Stephen, thanks for being here today.
That's my pleasure, Chris. Nice to talk to you.